All right. We have just left our friends with the WBDC and are now engaging another longtime ally here at the award-winning For the People. I'm talking about Connecticut Voices for Children. Connecticut Voices recently released their 2025 State of Working Connecticut Report, which is focusing on increasing the labor force and job growth by making wages fairer. The report's author, Dr. Patrick O'Brien, has been kind enough to join us today to help us understand why he was examining this important subject and what he discovered in his research. We will get right into that. But first, we want to remind you that Career Resources is turning 30 this month. Talk about job growing and workforce allies. This organization certainly is one of them. And since 1995, Career Resources has been a transformative leader in workforce development, empowering thousands of job seekers across Connecticut with the tools, training, and opportunities they need to build stronger futures. So they're kicking off their 30th year with a special $30,000 for 30 fundraising campaign that's going to challenge the organization to raise $30,000. So from now through August 31st, folks need to help raise at least $15,000 because there's a matching $15,000 contribution ready to launch from Career Resources board member Mike Finn. I'm sorry, Mike, thank you. You can contribute. You can learn more about this effort and how Career Sources can assist you or is making a difference in Connecticut's workforce. We hope you'll participate. Just go to careerresources.org for that important information. All right, Dr. O'Brien, thank you for joining us. Let's start by just reminding people about your affiliation with Connecticut Voices for Children and how you became involved in authoring this important late report that they've just released.
Sure. So thanks for having me. I'm the Research and Policy Director at Connecticut Voices for Children, which is a research-based child advocacy organization working to ensure that Connecticut's a thriving and equitable state where all children achieve their full potential. And each year we release a State of Working Connecticut report, and I generally oversee our fiscal and economic policy report. So I've authored the State of Working Connecticut report the last several years.
Okay. How do you go about narrowing the focus point each year that you have taken on this responsibility? Is it based on trends that you're seeing? Is it based on anecdotal instances from people you're interacting with? How do you determine which subject you're going to tackle every year?
So that's a great question. Generally, we usually the reports in general is focused on low middle wage workers. So we're usually always looking at wages each year to see the dynamics there. And jobs are obviously important because those are the primary source of income for most families. And so generally, we want to be looking at, at jobs and wages, but we're also just trying to see, when we dive into the data, what seems to be a big problem that we see in the data where, for example, is Connecticut an outlier? What do we think, looking at the labor market, what seems to be, the biggest problems from our perspective that we could, put some policy options to address? I will say I also tend to oversee our fiscal policy work, so our budget and tax work. And so I often lift up a lot of what I think are relationships between the labor market and the budget. So our job growth really has a big impact on our economic growth, and our economic growth is a big driver of our budget capacity. That works on obviously how much tax revenue we can raise to fund the budget. It also works on the spending side because it affects the amount that the spending cap can grow. So I really see all of these issues as related and think about, how can we help low middle wage workers? What are the big problems in our labor market? Are those big problems in the labor market related to the budget? And if we, see some big problems at play, what are some policy options that we can put forward to try to address the interaction, of all of these issues?
So the day after 2024 State of Working Connecticut was released, you turned your attention to or right around there, maybe you took a day off, turned your attention toward the next trend or the next issue you wanted to tackle. The new report, for folks who hope to go and check it out and read it and learn from it, has three sections regarding labor force and job growth in the U.S. and Connecticut, right?
Yeah, so I'm happy I can give you a high-level overview of the key findings, if that would be useful.
Yeah, that's great.
Sure. So there's a lot of data in the report, but I think at the very highest level, really, the report can be summarized, I think, in three key main points. So first, we see that Connecticut's job growth has lagged the national recovery since the pandemic-induced recession, and that's really continuing a decades-long trend. And this is important because slower job growth weakens the state's overall economic recovery. It also limits its ability to reduce its long-term debt while also providing necessary support in the budget for families and children. Second, a major contributor to the state's slower job growth is its slower labor force growth. And we found this is largely due to two factors. There's been a decrease in the labor force among prime-age individuals who are most likely to be raising families. And there's also been a decrease in the labor force among women who are disproportionately responsible for caregiving. And then third, we saw that compared to the U.S., Connecticut has experienced slower wage growth, greater wage inequality, and substantial gender, racial, and ethnic wage gaps. So in addition to addressing the state's high costs, such as housing and childcare, it's also really essential to make wages fair. And then importantly, this would make it more affordable for low and middle wage workers to live and raise families in the state. And the increase in the financial return to work would also help to boost the state's labor force and job growth. And then finally, in the report, basically to address all of these related problems, the report includes several policy options. We have some fiscal policy options that include indexing the Connecticut personal income tax to inflation and hiring more tax auditors at the Department of Revenue Services, which could pay for inflation indexing. And then we have a bucket of labor market policy options that include limiting the use of non-compete agreements, increasing the salary threshold for overtime pay protections, and establishing predictable scheduling protections for hourly workers. So again, just a high, kind of a high-level summary of what's in the report, and I'm happy to talk more about any of the individual problems or policy options.
Yeah, we've heard headlines for the past few months about the issues and pushback in Washington about the non-disclosure agreements, but let's really kind of stick to focusing in Connecticut, unless there is some national overlay that's of critical need to incorporate into the conversation. Let's start with talking about a few of these points that we might actually be able to accomplish or at least move the needle on in the next 12 months in regards to some of the outcomes of the report and the recommendations that you made.
Sure. So I have to talk about in more detail any of the individual problems, if you want, or are you thinking more on the policy option solution side?
Oh, yeah. I mean, state the problem and the possible solution and likelihood we might be able to at least begin addressing it in the coming year.
Sure. So let me say a little bit, I think, more about the labor force problem. Is we dove into this a little bit more this year. We provided some data that hasn't been publicly available anywhere else that we were able to calculate from some federal data sets. And so just for, context, we looked at from February 2020 through January 2025, and we saw over this period, essentially, which traces from the start of the pandemic-induced recession through the start of this year, we saw that Connecticut's total labor force grew by 1.2%, and that was compared to 3.8% in the U.S. And so we saw that gap is equivalent to nearly 50,000 fewer potential workers than if the state had kept pace with the nation, and was really a major contributor to a slower job growth. And again, when we broke that down, we saw that essentially the primary driver of that was essentially that the number of prime age individuals, those are individuals aged 25 to 54 years old, those individuals in Connecticut's labor force decreased by 1% compared to an increase of 3.2% in the U.S. And so that's a gap that's equivalent to nearly 50,000 fewer potential workers in the state than if we had kept pace with the nation. And so what we really
let me just stop you on that one, Patrick, if I may. So did our 1% loss in effect help feed the national 3.2% growth? Are we losing prime age workforce individuals to other states? For a number of the reasons we'll talk about in the next few minutes?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we try to break that down of a couple different dynamics. So when we say the labor force, it's driven by two things. It's driven by the working age, it's driven by the civilian non-institutional population or the working age population, and then the labor force participation rate of that population. So when you break that down, we see that in Connecticut, when we look at the population of 25 to 54 year olds, that decreased by negative 0.7% in Connecticut compared to an increase of 1.9% in the U.S. And so two things could be going on there. You could have some people that are leaving the state, and you could have some people essentially that are aging out of that group. So they've just gotten older. So we can't disentangle who's leaving the state versus which in that group basically moved to the older group, and we had, you know, not enough younger people filling that in. But we definitely saw a decrease in the population of that group. Mm. But then we also saw that there was a 1 percentage point decrease in the labor force participation of that group. So what that means is the population of individuals in the state 25 to 54 years old decreased from 2019 to 2024, and then a smaller percentage of that smaller group entered the labor force. So there's a couple different dynamics going on there.
And also it appears we were just talking with folks from the WBDC about infusing support and grants and assistance for women owned businesses. But women in the workforce also showed a kind of a disparate difference between what was happening here in Connecticut and the national level, right?
Yeah, so that's in part a similar story, a part a dissimilar story. So it is true that the labor force among women shrank overall, but at the same time, the components of that were that the population of women in Connecticut actually grew from 2019 to 2024. The problem is that the labor force participation rate decreased, and it more than offset that growth in the population of women. So it wasn't that we lost women in the state, it was that their labor force participation rate decreased. So these are like they're related problems, which is also important to understand the individual components, because it importantly meant that we weren't losing women. Essentially, it was just they're in the state. It was just, you know, why did they leave the labor force, and what steps can you take to help them get back in the labor force?
Okay. In the last 5 or 6 minutes that we have with you, Patrick, let's switch gears now to wages, because that's another key component of this report. And there were a number of key findings regarding growth inequality and gaps.
Yeah, so we looked at wage growth, wage inequality, and wage gaps. With wage growth, we lifted up two dynamics. So if you look from 2019 to 2024, which would be the full recovery from the pandemic-induced recession to date, it is the case that most workers in Connecticut experienced real wage growth, so that was generally less than in the U.S. However, if you look from just 2021 to 2024, which is the more recent phase of the recovery from the pandemic-induced recession, and that's been marked by historic inflation, you see that most workers in the U.S. experience real wage growth, but most workers in Connecticut actually experience a decline in real wages, especially middle wage workers. So depending on the baseline year that you're looking at for the comparison, you can look at the data and say most workers are better off. But if you talk to a lot of workers, they say that they're not better off, and that might be because they're using as a reference, essentially, when inflation hit. So if you're looking at just the past 3 years, most middle-aged workers, their real wages actually declined. And so that contributed to lowering their standard of living during this period, and also just made it harder to afford living in the state compared to most other states when you're seeing the wage growth grow for middle-aged workers elsewhere. Mm-hmm. We also then looked at wage inequality. The key finding there was that Connecticut 2024 had greater levels of wage inequality compared to the U.S. And that's important for a whole host of reasons, one of which is that contributes to higher prices for local essential services, and it can make it harder for low and middle wage workers to afford living in the state compared to most other states. And then we also looked at what we call wage premiums and wage gaps. In particular, with the wage gaps, we saw that many workers in Connecticut experienced substantial gender, racial, and ethnic wage gaps that reflect disparities in some important key wage factors, but that also reflect disparities that persist among similarly situated workers, and it makes it harder for those affected workers to afford living in the state compared to other workers. And just to give a little bit of context on that, we see, for example, that working women in Connecticut earn 17 cents less per dollar compared to working men, and that number would be 15 cents less in the U.S., so we have a higher gender wage gap. And then, for example, if you look at the racial wage gap, you see that Black workers earn 23 cents less per dollar compared to white workers in Connecticut, and that's greater than the 22 cents less per dollar in the U.S. So in general, we see that we have substantial wage gaps, and they also tend to be larger compared to the U.S. So all of those factors, the slower wage growth, the greater wage inequality, and the substantial wage gaps are really making it hard for workers to afford living and raising families in the state.
Okay. You also mentioned the policy options that are being suggested in this report. And while we don't have time to really dig deep into all of them, I did want to wrap this conversation up with a little Sunday morning lesson in economics. Help us who are not living in your world, Patrick, understand what it means when you talk about the indexing of Connecticut personal income tax to inflation.
Yeah, so it's a great question. So, you know, most years people might receive a cost of living adjustment in their wages. So say you make $50,000, and then the next year you're making $52,000 because, you know, the cost went up. And so you're not really seeing an increase in your purchasing power. Your purchasing power might just be staying the same, keeping in line with the cost of goods and services that you're spending it on. But when your income like that increases, if the income tax is inflation indexed, it means that it won't tax a higher percentage of your wages. So say if when you are making $50,000 that you are paying 4% of your income in taxes, and then when you make $52,000 for your cost of living adjustment, you should still just be paying 4% of your income in taxes. But our state income tax, unlike the federal income tax, is not inflation indexed. So every time you get an increase in your wages, even if it literally is just a cost of living adjustment and it doesn't increase your standard of living, you pay a higher percentage of your income in the state income tax because of that. And to kind of put just a few numbers on that, we because it compounds each year. So it might be a little increase each year, but it builds up over time. So for example, we showed that for a middle wage worker, that would be somebody making $58,000 a year, which would be the annualized median hourly wage. In 10 years from now, just due to the lack of inflation indexing, that worker is going to be paying $566 a year more in the state income tax than they would otherwise pay. And that's equivalent to almost a 0.8 percentage point increase in their effective tax rate. In comparison, if you're making $400,000 a year, you're a very high wage worker, in 10 years from now, you're only going to be paying $63 more, right, which is equivalent to a 0.01 percentage point tax increase. And that's because we have this very progressive income tax, but when it's not inflation indexed, what it really means is it operates as a tax increase more heavily on low and middle wage workers. So every year that we don't inflation index the income tax, it really operates as a tax increase on low and middle wage workers, and it's offsetting a lot of important benefits. And so, for example, our state minimum wage is inflation indexed. So the lowest wage workers are going to be getting an increase in their wages each year. But part of the benefits of that are going to be offset each and every year by our state income tax because it's not inflation indexed. So it's really it's a hidden tax increase on low and middle wage workers.
And this is why we bring in folks like you, Dr. O'Brien, because when it comes to, bumping into our local legislators at events in the grocery store, visiting them or writing to them or calling them, these are the important nitty-gritty points that they need to be able to articulate in an educated way. And you're, I dare say, helping folks be able to do that. And I appreciate that. I appreciate you and your work with the Connecticut Voices for Children. They just released their 2025 State of Working Connecticut report, increasing the labor force and job growth by making wages fairer. Dr. O'Brien has authored that report. We appreciate you being with us this morning. If you'd like to read it and learn from it, go to ConnecticutVoices.org in their publications tab and check it out. And once again, thank you and to Ashley for making this happen. And we will be looking forward to welcoming Connecticut Voices back on the program soon.